This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The Nobel Prize in Economics recognizes natural experiments. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. Among the sciences, economics has a challenge. You can't set up big controlled experiments quite as easily as you can in, say, medicine. So, for example, you can set up a clinical trial for a new medication. That's kind of easy. But you can't set up an experiment where you raise the minimum wage in one city and not in another. But what you can do is study situations where this happens naturally, where, for example, two similar regions set different minimum wages. This is what's called a natural experiment. The winners of this year's Nobel Prize in Economics all contributed to this form of research. David Card at UC Berkeley, Joshua Engrist at MIT, and Guido Imbens at Stanford. Back in the 90s, David Card used a natural experiment to challenge the conventional thinking that higher minimum wages necessarily drive unemployment. Professor Card, thank you for joining us.
Morning.
You were awarded the prize as much for what you studied as how you studied it. Can you explain how you went about examining this question, for example, of whether raising the minimum wage actually causes reductions in employment?
So minimum wage in both New Jersey and Pennsylvania and most other states at the time was $4.25 an hour. And then the New Jersey legislature said, well, we're going to raise the minimum wage to $5.05. And there was no such law being passed in Pennsylvania. So what we did right away was we surveyed fast food restaurants in the two states. Then the minimum wage went up in New Jersey. And then we surveyed the same restaurants again 9 or 10 months later. And we looked at what had happened to employment growth at each fast food restaurant store by store.
Using this methodology, you found that, you know, raising the minimum wage doesn't necessarily hurt employment. A lot of people were skeptical of that, and they might ask, how doesn't it? Have you figured out why not?
So before the minimum wage went up, it was actually relatively good time in both New Jersey and Pennsylvania. And so there were a lot of stores with help wanted signs and recruitment bonuses and all kinds of incentives to try and get people to come in the door, almost exactly like it is right now in the labor market. And you might ask, well, if an employer is looking for workers and can't get them, why don't they just raise the wage? And if they raise the wage, yes, it's true that might attract some new workers, but they'll have to pay a higher wage on the ones they've already got. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to actually say, well, I'm willing to put up with some vacancies in return for keeping wages low on the people I've already got. And in that scenario, if you force them to raise the wage, they will be able to attract those extra workers. And the people they've got will get a bonus that they wouldn't have gotten if you hadn't forced them to raise the wage. But in addition, you'll get all those extra workers. And so that kind of model asserts that employers set wages. Wages aren't just set by an abstract market mechanism like they would be, say, in the stock market.
I mean, what was so very interesting about that is that, you know, the good old economic forces of Econ 101 are a little more complicated in the real world. Do you think there are other standard ways of thinking in economics that are ripe for challenge these days?
Actually, this particular question about do employers set wages is really central to issues about, say, the gender wage gap. Because work that I've done suggested that firms are setting wages a little bit lower for women than for men. And that can account for something like a quarter to a third of the gender wage gap. And recently, I've done exactly the same kind of analysis looking at the difference between non-white and white workers in Brazil and found the same kind of thing. And there's hundreds of other hypotheses in economics that aren't literally true. And how much they're not true is sort of a matter of open debate and research.
David Card is a professor of economics at the University of California, Berkeley. He was awarded the Nobel Memorial Prize in Economic Sciences yesterday for his empirical contributions to labor economics. Congratulations and thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Let's do the numbers. S&P and Dow futures are down about 0.1%, with Dow futures down 42 points. NASDAQ futures are up 0.2%. And the 10-year Treasury yield is at 1.601%. Moderna, by the way, says it has no plans to share the recipe for its COVID-19 vaccine, but it won't go after patent infringement on anyone making a COVID vaccine during the pandemic either. Moderna shares are up about 1% in pre-market trading.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Earlier this year, the IRS sent millions of U.S. taxpayers letters telling them they'd made a mistake and owed money. Usually the problem had to do with accounting for COVID relief payments. Last month, the IRS followed up with a second wave of letters that a lot of people thought were a scam. But it turns out the letters were real. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
Michael White got one of the approximately 13 million letters the IRS sent out in the spring. The Wisconsin swim coach says it informed him he was getting a smaller relief payment than he'd claimed. Okay, he thought, so much for that. Then he got the second letter last month, which was
really confusing. It made the same claims as the first, and I thought the first was saying it was over.
The IRS is sending out about 5 million of those confusing second letters. Here's why. In some of the first letters, it neglected to tell taxpayers they have a right to appeal. That's all the second letter says. The IRS's national taxpayer advocate, Aaron Collins, says you can call the number on the letter to appeal.
But it's right now the IRS is only answering less than 20% of those calls.
She recommends replying with your own letter, certified, of course, so you've got documentation to make your case. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Our producers are Rose Conlin, Meredith Gerritsen, Stephen Ryan, Alex Schroeder, Daniel Shin, and Erica Soderstrom. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.